Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Through archaeological research, museums, archives, and historical texts, we assume that we have an idea of what has happened in the past. Oh sure, we don't pretend to know the small details, but we believe that we have the big events down pat, at least the ones that lead us to the present. But what if we have missed something so fundamentally huge that it would shake our very understanding of the world? Set at some point in the future, in this month's two-part story, a young person becomes entangled in a strange series of events that challenges her understanding of human history. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 54, The Awakening, Part 1. Somewhere in some time we might find that everything we thought we knew about history was wrong. Maya looked up at the narrow open slits near the ceiling of her grimy adobe cell. Mostly buried in the parched ground, it afforded only a modicum of relief from the intense heat. She desperately wanted to interpret her incarceration here as a good sign. They could have just as easily left her to wither on the sun-baked surface, she thought, ascertaining that their intentions were to keep her alive, at least for the moment. The sun had slowly traversed its way across those slits three times now, indifferently marking the time she had spent in the cramped room. 3 days, and her only contact with her captors had been the water and meager rations that were slipped through a small flap in the door at irregular intervals. 3 days since Maya had been abducted from the dusty streets of Mountain Springs, almost immediately after arriving on the airship Avro. The solitary confinement had given Maya time to reflect, time to try and piece the events of the last few weeks together, but the fragments didn't construct a neatly packaged story. Too much was missing, and as hard as she tried, the parts she had didn't adequately explain why she found herself imprisoned somewhere in the hot, arid wilderness of the ever-expanding Western Badlands. Maya's old life as a student, working in her parents' cafe, now seemed like a rapidly fading dream, evaporating in the intolerant heat. The weirdness had first started around her best friend Tim, a teen her own age, who was working at Maya's family's cafe to pay off his parents' hospital bills after they had died from the injuries they had received in a mysterious car accident. Tim had liked to tinker with old tech and had managed, using the cafe's net broadcasting license, to create an ancient online surface called Gopher from the days before the GlobalNet. Although he insisted it was legal and didn't need government consent, odd people began to show up at the cafe asking indirect but prying questions. Soon after, she and Tim had been approached by an eccentric old lady who disguised herself as a street person, justifying it by claiming that no one ever looked twice at the poor and disenfranchised. She had shown them a hidden archive of very old printed books, insisting that the current digital versions of those texts had been subtly altered over time to hide the activities of some supposedly secret group that she and her rag-encrusted street friends were fighting against. Maya had simply rejected it all as fantasy and paranoia until she and Tim had been followed to the cafe, where, in the middle of the afternoon, her parents had disappeared, and enough illegal online activity tagged to both Tim and Maya's net access IDs to put them in prison for a very long time. A cryptic clue from Maya's mother led them to a summer resort town on the shores of Hudson Bay. Then, after an odd accident, Tim disappeared, and she found herself stranded alone without any money or explanations. That had been at the beginning of the summer, and now at its end she was here in a place that was supposed to have been completely abandoned 100 years ago. The cell door suddenly sprang open, casting a blinding pillar of light into her tiny cell. The parched air quickly invaded, making it momentarily hard for Maya to breathe. Recovering, she squinted and in vain tried to shade her eyes. Painfully, she made out a slender silhouette impatiently beckoning her to come out. Maya hesitated, forcing the figure to unceremoniously reach in and drag her out by the arm. After being cooped up for days, the harsh penetrating light and burning air overwhelmed Maya, incapacitating her. Within a few seconds, she was sweating and became convinced that if they were going to leave her out here, she would not survive the hour. Why didn't her captor seem bothered by the heat and sun, she wondered. As he, or she, Maya's eyes hadn't adjusted enough to let her know which, walked away from Maya, leaving her slumped against the domed roof of her former cell. Maya thought she could feel all the moisture being boiled out of her body, and in desperation rolled over to see if she could crawl back to the relative cool of the small, half-buried adobe hut, but found that the door had been locked and closed. Exhausted by the effort and the intense heat, she fell into a mild state of delirium, haunted by recent events. Right after Tim had disappeared, Maya hadn't known what to do. She and Tim had fled to New Hudson, with the apparent help of the group that the old woman in Way Station claimed to run. Maya still had trouble envisioning the ancient feeble woman as anything other than an eccentric, certainly not the grand matriarch of an ancient secret society that was trying to preserve the true history of the world, as she had claimed. But events since Maya and Tim's meeting with the bag lady seemed to support the old woman's claims. How Maya, her parents, and her friend Tim had become entangled in the eccentric lady's bizarre web was still a mystery. However, Maya's present desperate situation was a testament to its reality. Just as Maya began to consider how much longer she could last in the angry sun, she heard the crisp crunch of gravel under tires, then fast footsteps approaching.
I keep forgetting how fragile your type really are. I probably should have brought the bus over before I pulled you out of the hole,
a gruff female voice said in a somewhat condescending tone. Maya felt a small reprieve from the heat as a shadow passed over her and opened an umbrella.
Here, this should help until we get you into the bus. It's air-conditioned. You'll feel better once you're inside.
The almost anemically thin woman leaned over and helped Maya up, passing her the umbrella, then supported her as they made their way to a waiting vehicle that was belching out thick black exhaust. A few steps away, the rear door, as if knowing it was time, slid open and a wash of cool air flowed out, making Maya's captor shiver slightly as she helped Maya climb into a seat. The door resealed itself and the air conditioning began to complain, struggling against all odds to keep the interior at a comfortable temperature. Like a wilted plant sucking at its first drops of water, Maya began to revive. The bus suddenly lurched into motion, forcing Maya to grab the armrests. At some point in the past, it had been divided into two very different compartments. A larger roofless forward area, open to the stifling heat, that could seat 10 plus a driver, and a smaller area at the rear where Maya was sitting that was closed in by thick double-paned glass, and most importantly, was air-conditioned. Maya was the only passenger. With her mind clearing in the soothing atmosphere, Maya scrutinized the woman who had come to retrieve her. She was now driving the bus. All Maya could see was the back of her head and shoulders over the top of the driver's seat. The woman's skin appeared leathery and heavily tattooed in ochres and browns, and, for some reason where the sun touched it, her skin seemed to respond by darkening. Her hair was short and black, but her shoulders seemed too narrow and her neck way too long. Maya passed off the elongated proportions to distortions in the rough glass. From the location of the sun, she thought that they were heading further south into the Badlands. Not a good sign, she knew, so she decided to memorize the landmarks along their route. However unlikely it would be that she might have the opportunity to escape, she would at least be able to find her way back. But, as the monotonous barren landscape rolled by, despite her best efforts, Maya fell into a light sleep. Her mind replaying jumbled, anxiety-filled flashbacks of the last few days. Initially, Maya's rational side had insisted that it had been her guile that had engineered her eventual departure from New Hudson Beach by landing a job on the Avril, then helping her jump ship in New Mountain Springs. But her intuition hinted at something else. Why had the airship just happened to be stopping in New Mountain Springs on that tour when it usually didn't? Why had it been so easy to slip away from the people who were supposedly assisting her in New Hudson? One August night, her door had been left unlocked. the whispered conversation about where her parents might be, spoken within earshot of her by accident, was fortuitous. Although up to that point, the people around Maya had been very careful not to reveal anything. A chance meeting on a New Hudson Street with the Avril's maitre d', who just happened to be looking for extra help, had been a stroke of good luck. And up to 3 days ago, Maya had been trying very hard to convince herself that this had all been coincidental. But, in hindsight, it now appeared to be a very well-planned crumb trail, carefully laid out for her to follow. By whom and why, she didn't know. The bus mechanically jerked to a stop, jarring Maya awake. She looked out the window to see if she could figure out where they were. The glare of the sun fluoresced every spot on the thick glass, making it difficult to resolve specific details. Maya realized that she must have been asleep for hours and cursed. Without landmarks, finding her way back would be almost impossible. Maya's escort appeared to have gotten out of the driver's seat and was now standing a couple of meters away, talking to a small group of slim-set figures silhouetted against the sun, casting long knife-edged shadows across the barren ground. Behind them, in the distance, where there shouldn't be such a thing, Maya thought she could see the outlines of a city with many tall buildings. She noted that the structures weren't rigidly geometric, appearing more grown than constructed. A click from the other side of the passenger compartment made Maya jump. Then the door shook as someone outside wrestled it open. Maya found herself abruptly staring at her escort, the woman's face lit by the last rays of the setting sun. To Maya, she appeared to be something not entirely human. The woman had a long, narrow face with larger-than-normal roundish eyes. What she thought to have been tattoos was the actual texture of the woman's skin, which was lustrous and scaly like a snake's. It made Maya instinctively retract back into her seat.
"Wait here. I'll be back to get you in a bit."
Her surly escort barked, then added in a softer tone,
"It's still too hot for you out there."
As if in a hurry, the woman carelessly slammed the door and left. Maya waited until the sun had just dipped below the horizon. She pushed her face up to the warm glass and, seeing no one in sight, tried the door. To her surprise, she found it open, hesitated, considering for a moment that they might be manipulating her into doing this, then jumped out into the still heavy heat of the dusky air. Checking again that she had not been seen, Maya inched her way around the back of the bus to the side facing away from the odd city, then carefully began to make her way forward to the open driver's seat. She hoped it was too dark for anyone to see her feet from the other side. The beastly old machine was making wheezing sounds as it impatiently idled, belching the occasional hiccup of black smoke into the air. They had left the bus running, Maya guessed, to keep the air conditioning going for her. It was a fortuitous bit of charity that would now do more than help Maya keep cool. Sweat began to trickle down her back as she neared the driver's seat. Maya froze, hearing the gravelly crunch of a foot in the sand, then another, and another. They approached her from behind, along the other side of the bus. Maya willed herself into a frozen shadow, hoping that whoever it was would not look in the passenger cab. The footsteps started again, now moving around the front of the vehicle. In desperation, Maya looked around for a place to hide. But the unforgiving landscape offered so little that even a prairie dog would have trouble hiding. Two red eyes peered around the corner at Maya. After a second of intense terror, she realized that those eyes were carried on four legs. It was some type of animal, not her captors. Hoping that the thing wasn't a predator, Maya quietly tried to shoo it away. It ignored her, taking its own sweet time to decide what it wanted to do, before eventually ambling off. Maya carefully slipped into the driver's seat, examined the controls, then, in the fading light, dropped the reluctant bus noisily into gear. She heard excited footsteps start to run toward her as she swung the unwieldy machine around, aiming it back the way it had come. Painfully slow, as if reluctant to obey its new master, the bus began to pick up speed. Maya hoped it was fast enough to outpace her rapidly approaching pursuers. A dry wind had picked up, blowing sand and dirt across the trail, obscuring what little pathetic light there was from the quarter moon. Maya dared not stop until the moon had set and the pink glow of another day started to push over the horizon. Realizing that she had come much farther than the trip in with her escort, she knew she was utterly lost. Too tired to care, Maya shut the rattling machine off to conserve fuel, slipped out of the driver's seat, rummaged an old tarp from behind a row of benches in the open passenger area, used it to create a makeshift tent under the bus, hoping it would give her enough shade to survive the day's heat, then immediately went to sleep on the ground. When Maya finally woke, the angry sun was melting into the horizon again. She was parched and knew it was a mistake not to have made sure that the bus had water on it before she tried something this risky, but wasn't entirely sure that it would have made any difference in her hasty choice to run. She waited for the sun to completely dip below the distant mountains, hoping it would cool off a bit, then explored the bus for water but found none, and knew she would have to find her way back tonight. She doubted if there was enough coal oil left in the tanks for more than that, and without water, she didn't have much more time after the fuel ran out anyway. Maya lay the tarp over the driver's seat so she wouldn't burn herself on its hot metal edges, then started the bus and moved off in the direction she thought was north. As the evening stars shyly made their appearance, Maya looked up trying to find Polaris and steer towards it. Each new star was a perfect pinhole in the darkening dome of the sky, fondly reminding Maya of the peaceful nights she had spent on the Avro. Maya had never flown before. Few these days had. After the oil had run out in the previous century, synthetic fuel was too expensive to waste on civilian travel, so planes had all but disappeared. Maya had seen a model of an old airliner in a museum once and thought that it looked like a bird, inspiring her imagination about what it must be like to fly. But the likelihood that she would ever have the money to afford a ticket on an airship, the only practical way to fly now, meant that her desire to soar through the sky had remained a dream, at least up until 2 weeks ago. So working as a waitress in the Avro to get the mountain springs had been an unexpected treat. Gina, the airship's maitre d', had taken an immediate liking to Maya as soon as they had met on the street, and within half an hour had offered her a job. After the last sitting in the dining room each night, Gina and Maya would walk to the rear observation deck of the airship and watch the night sky, Gina eventually asking Maya why she had been in New Hudson Beach.
"I know you're a bit too young to be on your own, especially in a shark-infested place such as New Hudson,"
Gina had started to say one night while gazing at the rising moon.
"I knew you needed help. That's why I took you on."
In her heart, Maya had known that it had been too easy. The airship had signed her on without even scanning her ident chip, and Gina had used her friendship with the aerodrome station guard to whisk her through traveler control with no questions asked. Guardedly, Maya replied,
"My parents went to New Hudson Beach on business, then disappeared. I was there looking for them and got a tip they were in New Mountain Springs."
Maya felt it was better not to mention her friend Tim, the odd group who had been following her, or the fact that she and Tim could be wanted by the authorities for net access violations.
"So you're on your own. No help from the authorities?"
Gina carefully questioned. Maya shook her head, giving only a one-word answer.
"Yes."
She was glad Gina was intuitive enough not to ask why she hadn't reported the disappearance. Maya had felt safe while she was on the Avro, but that had all too quickly ended when the airship stopped in New Mountain Springs, the only place on the northern edge of the Badlands that was still inhabited. In the winter, the springs was an offbeat stop for wealthy tourists, there seeking the medicinal qualities of the briny waters in its receding lake. She had been driving for several hours now, looking for landmarks and stars she recognized, in part to navigate, but in truth to keep her mind off her growing thirst. Maya thought she saw something jump in front of the bus and instinctively hit the brakes. Realizing her mistake just a bit too late, she quickly put the bus back into gear. But just as it was beginning to pick up speed, a shadowy figure jumped onto the running board
grabbed the steering wheel and pushed her aside. Maya fell hard against the metal side of the passenger seat. Partly disoriented, she looked up at her assailant, kicking him as hard as she could until he howled in pain. He brought the bus to an abrupt stop, then abandoned the driver's seat. Maya painfully pulled herself up to look around, but her eyes were suddenly blinded by the beam of a bright torch.
"Hey, Maya, what were you trying to do, kill me?"
A voice Maya thought she'd never hear again yelled. Still dazed by the bang on her head and the brilliant light, she refused to believe that the voice she heard was here in the middle of the desert. Her mind, she rationalized, was just playing cruel tricks on her. But the illusion persisted.
"Maya, it's me, Tim,"
it claimed from somewhere behind the glaring light, then said in a softer voice,
"You're safe now. Trust me."
"I don't believe you,"
Maya fearfully shot back, holding the place where her head had impacted the chair. The torch swung around, illuminating its owner's face. Maya gasped, horrified by what she saw. It had the familiar features of her friend, but they had been grafted onto an alien creature, similar to the one that had escorted her to the city. Its body was very slender, with the same elongated neck, and the face likewise narrow. But the nose and the mouth were distinctly Tim's. Maya was revolted. She felt her empty stomach begin to heave and quickly looked away.
"What are you?"
she whispered with disdain.
"Why are you trying to torment me by making yourself look like my friend?"
"I am your friend,"
the creature stubbornly insisted.
"I may look different, but really, I'm the same person underneath."
"You're lying. I don't believe you,"
Maya spit back.
"What do you things want with me? And what did you do with my parents?"
With a surging sense of desperation, Maya looked into the desert, calculating how far she could get if she ran. Realizing that it was futile, gave up and resigned herself to being captured again. But this creature, claiming to be Tim, hadn't locked her up like the other one. Why? She wondered. To be continued.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 54, Somewhere, Sometime, The Awakening, Part 1. We hope that you enjoyed this story, and we'll come back next month for Part 2. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us. We'd love to hear from you, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Pod Safe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't change anything.